endless narrative left untold, and the voices forever silenced.
As the latest Israeli assault on Gaza has reflected the clear divide of the media, it is not objectivity but truth that protesters are demanding. Veteran journalists who covered the apartheid struggle in South Africa say you cannot get any closer to the story than the journalists in Gaza. They note that only those who capture the realities as they play out on the ground fall into this category. In their opinion, journalists who are embedded with the Israeli media and have subjected their work to regime vetting have compromised the story. South African veteran correspondents also challenge the Western attitude towards the figures reported from Gaza, including the number of journalists killed.
What anyone who disputes the numbers is saying to us is that we don't trust the reporting because you're Arab or because you're Palestinian. Nobody whose office is in Europe can tell me that what my colleague in Ramallah tells me is not true. So there's that's the contradiction.
With at least one journalist killed daily in the ongoing Israeli aggression, South African media practitioners want international law to be upheld and an end to the killing of their colleagues. They say the death of journalists mean a blackout of truth. Hassan Siria, Cape Town.
Only minutes before dawn on Sunday, January 28th, a roaring sound broke the silence of Iran's central desert. The Simorgh satellite launch vehicle was successfully sent into space from Imam Khomeini Space Launch Terminal in Semnan Province with an unprecedented mission: to put three homegrown satellites into orbit with a minimum altitude of 450 kilometers and a maximum of 1,100 kilometers above the Earth's surface. The successful launch, marked by multiple injection of satellites into orbit, has ushered in a new era in the country's space program.
For the first time in the history of the country's space program, we managed to inject multiple satellites into space. Also, the satellite carrier managed to go beyond the altitude of 1,000 kilometers and reach an orbit as high as 1,110 kilometers.
Iran will, in the near future, be able to send heavy satellites weighing 250 kilograms into different altitudes of the lower Earth orbit on domestically manufactured Simorgh satellite carrier. This indigenously manufactured satellite is yet another example of Iran's breakthroughs in the field of science and technology. Iran is now among the top 10 nations in the world that are capable of producing and launching satellites into aerospace. The three satellites launched into space simultaneously during this mission were Mahda, Hotef-1, and Kayhan-2. Mahda's main task is to assess the performance of the Simorgh launcher in multiple injections of space cargo at low altitudes, as well as evaluate new designs and the reliability of homegrown space technologies. Kayhan-2 is developed for space-based positioning, and Hotef-1 is concerned with narrowband communications technology in the Internet of Things.
Despite being research satellites, they are really important to us because they enjoy various technologies developed by Iranian scientists. With this launch, as well as the ones that will take place in the near future, we seek to reach maturity in our space program and play a serious and effective role in the world's space industry.
Iranian officials have time and again stressed that the country reserves the inalienable and legitimate right to make scientific and research advances in the field of aerospace. They say Iran does not wait for permission from certain countries in order to use peaceful technologies to accelerate its scientific progress. Mahdia Posyan, Semnan.
The limelight. Donald Trump has long claimed he personally owed tens of millions of dollars to an obscure entity related to a Chicago tower. But court documents now claim the Trump Organization now says the loan never existed. And as a result, Trump may have evaded taxes on $48 million in income. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has covered this story and tells us more. Always read the footnotes. That's where former federal judge Barbara Jones, the court-appointed special monitor in Donald Trump's New York business fraud case, just planted a financial bombshell that legal experts say suggests Donald Trump lied knowingly and repeatedly on his federal financial disclosures about a major loan that never existed and may have evaded taxes on $48 million in income. The detail came in a letter Barbara Jones filed on Friday, 26th of January, to update New York Judge Arthur Engoron, first reported by The Messenger, on her efforts to get a full and clear accounting of the Trump Organization's assets. The letter claims yet again that Donald Trump and his company have filed statements containing inconsistencies and errors, but have been cooperative in the review process. But former Judge Barbara Jones tucked a major revelation into footnote 6, writing that a massive chunk of debt Trump has claimed to owe one of his own companies for years apparently does not exist and never did. When I inquired about this loan, I was informed that there are no loan agreements that memorialize the loan, but that it was a loan that was believed to be between Donald J. Trump individually and Chicago Unit Acquisition for $48 million, Jones wrote, referencing the name of Trump's LLC that held his debt. However, in recent discussions with the Trump Organization, it indicated that it has determined that this loan never existed, and thus that it would be removed from any upcoming form submitted to the Office of Government Ethics, and would also be removed from subsequent versions of corporate financial statements, Barbara Jones wrote. If true, that would essentially be an admission that the Trump Organization, that all the financial disclosures Trump has filed with the federal government listed an entirely fictional debt worth tens of millions of dollars, which Donald Trump claimed he personally owed to one of his own companies. Asked to comment on Barbara Jones's letter, Alan Garten, chief legal counsel for the Trump Organization, told the Daily Beast that her claim that the company confessed to the loan never existing was inaccurate and the loan did in fact exist. That's one of the many inaccuracies contained in the monitor's letter, which we will be addressing with the court, Alan Garten said in a phone interview. Moreover, in contradiction to the ex-president's own statements about the mystery loan, Alan Garten repeatedly insisted that the LLC actually owed the money to Donald Trump. Asked to confirm the loan, Garten replied, yes, the loan existed, specifying that it was an internal loan where Trump lent money to the entity that he owns. Yet all of Trump's financial disclosures, including his most recent amended version approved by the Office of Government Ethics last October, clearly state that it was Trump who owed Chicago Unit Acquisition LLC. He's consistently listed his debt as more than $50 million in the form of what's known as springing loan, a loan with unfavorable terms to the borrower. In fact, Trump confirmed this arrangement himself. In a 2016 interview with the New York Times, Donald Trump claimed that he bought back his loan from a group of banks several years ago. Trump said that he's chosen to keep the debt on his books, the New York Times reported, claiming that he pays interest on it to himself, despite the LLC's practically worthless valuation. We don't assess any value to it because we don't care, Trump said in the interview. I have the mortgage, that is all there is. Very simple, I am the bank. Jordan Leibowitz, Communications Director at Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, said that, assuming the court filing is accurate, Donald Trump would appear to have intentionally and repeatedly broken the law. The British newspaper The Independent asks, did Donald Trump evade taxes with a fake loan? Watchdog discovers Chicago deal that never existed. Days before an expected final judgment in a fraud case that could imperil Donald Trump's sprawling business empire, a court-appointed monitor overseeing his businesses reported financial disclosures that are either incomplete, present results inconsistently, or contain errors. One of those findings, according to her report, appears to suggest that the former president evaded taxes on millions of dollars in income by hiding money in fake loan transactions. Donald Trump and his associates have been cooperative throughout the months-long monitoring process, former federal judge Barbara Jones wrote in her 12-page report on Friday, 26th of January. But one detail in a footnote halfway through the letter to New York Judge Arthur N. Goron appears to allege that the former president not only repeatedly lied about his net worth and assets, as alleged by the state's attorney general, but that a major $48 million loan for one of his brand building properties may have never actually existed. When I inquired about this loan, I was informed that there are no loan agreements that memorialize the loan, Barbara Jones wrote, but that it was a loan that was believed to be between Donald J. Trump individually and Chicago Unit Acquisition, the name of Mr. Trump's LLC that took on the debt for his Trump International Hotel and Tower in the Windy City. However, in recent discussions with the Trump Organization, it indicated that it has determined that this loan never existed, and thus that it would be removed from any upcoming forms submitted to government agencies and in corporate financial statements, Barbara Jones wrote. The report strikes at a mystery that has bounced around for several years. Donald Trump has reported in financial statements that he owes over $50 million to Chicago Unit Acquisition LLC, an entity that Donald Trump owns and thus has owed a substantial sum of money to a company that he controls. Yes, the loan existed, according to Alan Garten, chief legal counsel for the Trump Organization, speaking to the Daily Beast, which first reported the $48 million detail. That's one of many inaccuracies contained in the monitor's letter, which we will be addressing with the court, Garten said. He called the loan arrangements an internal loan, wherein Donald Trump loaned money to the entity that he owns. But Mr. Trump claimed in a financial statement as recently as last October that the arrangement was the opposite, listing debts to Chicago Unit Acquisition as more than $50 million. In 2016, Donald Trump confirmed that arrangement in an interview with the New York Times, claiming that he bought back the loan from a group of banks several years ago and that he pays interest on it to himself, despite the LLC's practically worthless valuation. We don't assess any value to it because we don't care, Trump said at the time. I have the mortgage, that is all there is. Very simple, I am the bank. In 2018, Mother Jones reported Donald Trump may have fabricated the loan to make it appear that his LLC owed debt that had already been forgiven, allowing him to evade taxes on $48 million of cancelled debt. The letter from the court-appointed monitor in the fraud case 6 years later could bolster that central claim that the loan never existed.
We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new edition of Face to Face. Today, our guest is the Yemeni Prime Minister, Dr. Abdulaziz bin Saleh Al Habtour. Welcome, Doctor, and thank you for your time. Your decision of preventing the ships or vessels heading to the occupied ports in Palestine is a very bold decision. How did you make this decision, especially that you know that the Bab al-Mandab Strait is very vital for the international trade?
Of course, what is happening in the world in general and what is happening in Palestine in particular pushes any person who has a little dignity and humanity. This decision was based on humanitarian, religious, and moral aspects to support our people in Palestine. It is no longer important to confront the largest country or the smallest country while you witness daily queues of martyrs, wounded, and debris piling up over the heads of our people in Gaza and the rest of the Palestinian territories. This is a religious duty before which all considerations, whether geopolitical, strategic, or alliances of any kind, are insignificant. We know that America is rampaging throughout the world, and if we see things this way, we will not move and will remain in our homes. Therefore, we have a vision that stems from the vision of the axis of resistance, and this is what prompted us to respond.
How do you evaluate the effect of your decision to prevent the ships heading toward the occupied ports in Palestine on the economy of the Israeli regime? Is it effective to push this regime to stop the genocidal war against the people in Gaza?
The data that comes from the Zionist enemy says that there is more than 90% of the capacity in the port of Eilat idle, and this is a great gain for our people in Palestine and for us as well. When a port malfunctions in this way at the peak of confrontation, this is a great achievement.
The US and the UK launched a war against Yemen, saying that Yemenis are affecting or hampering the international trade and the Red Sea. They have waged multiple strikes for several days. Are you ready as Yemenis to fight these two countries, especially that you know they have a lot of weapons and a huge military?
The United States of America and Britain are aggressive countries against all of humanity, not against Yemen alone or any country seeking liberation from Western colonialism. Therefore, these two countries have their own old and new colonial projects. Britain and America are the ones who established the Israeli state in 1949, and therefore they seek to protect this entity by all means and capabilities. Whoever stands against this entity, whether groups, people, or countries, Washington and London will seek to destroy them. Going back to history, we remember when in the 1950s, Britain, France, and Israel attacked the Arab state of Egypt, which was then called the United Arab Republic. This was an attempt to control the Suez Canal. Had it not been for the circumstances at the time and the assistance of the Soviet Union, which was at the height of its power, the Arabs would not have been able to deter this tripartite aggression. And before that, in 1947, who sponsored the presence of the Haganah gangs that began the occupation of Palestine? Certainly the colonial countries, and these are the result of Sykes-Picot, the Balfour Declaration, and World War II. All the countries that considered themselves victorious in World War II established this entity. We followed the history of the United States of America, which entered the Vietnam War and was defeated. It entered a war in Korea and was defeated. It entered Iraq and Afghanistan and was also defeated. Imposed a siege on Iran since the establishment of the Islamic Republic in 1979 and failed. We are betting on our people, on history, and on the future that the United States will fail in every battle it enters.
Mr. Prime Minister, do you believe that America and Britain would maybe take a reckless step and attempt to invade the west coast of Yemen militarily?
We anticipate all possibilities and have all calculations for this day, but how many countries have tried throughout history to occupy the western coast of Yemen and failed, including Britain? Britain tried after it occupied Aden and then occupied parts of Hodeidah, then failed and emerged defeated. The Turks, although we are of the same religion, also failed to occupy the Yemenis. Saying these countries are major countries capable of occupying our country, and if the people thought in this way, no country in the entire world would be liberated. Countries are liberated by the strength of the will of their people, their organizations, and the strength of their ideas carried by the leadership of these people. There is an experience in Egypt when it expelled Britain, in Algeria when it expelled France, in Libya when it expelled Italy, and also when Britain was expelled from South Yemen in 1967. So it is the idea of an eternal struggle with these colonial powers that want to dominate the entire world, its resources and its straits. This has been part of a global concern for thousands of years. Alexander the Great reached the shores of Aden and Socotra Island with his forces, but was defeated. He tried to occupy the capital of the historic state of Sheba and failed. History gives us lessons, and we should study it very carefully and then proceed to develop our capabilities. In 2015, our capabilities were zero, a disunited army with multiple loyalties, and here was the role of Abdul Malik al-Houthi in leadership, rearranging the situation and liberating what could be liberated from Yemeni lands in the north and south, especially after the American, British and French embassies extended their influence over parts of our country. However, we entered into this great battle against 17 countries, and we only had with us the axis of resistance and the only existing state, the Islamic Republic of Iran.
How do you read the repercussions of the recent U.S. move by redesignating the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group? Is there a tangible effect on the Yemeni sovereignty and the Yemeni decision, especially in supporting the Palestinian people?
Anyone hostile to the Zionist entity will be considered a terrorist by the U.S. Iran, the leaders of the Palestinian resistance, the Libyan regime, Syria, and Lebanon were considered terrorists. These are like certificates that America distributes to whomever it wants, but they have no effect. It indeed controls the global official system and international organizations, but we are in a strategic dispute with America, the content of which is that the Israeli entity is a temporary entity. We will not meet with America until it withdraws its bases and mercenaries that it collected from all corners of the earth. Now it is normal for them to pin charges on us through their media, international organizations, and Arab regimes that have normalized ties with the entity. The American decision will not affect us, as our relationship is with free peoples and countries that have their own decisions and are not subject to American hegemony, and it is a sublime relationship. Our relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Palestine. Everything that may be said by the enemies will not affect us. And just as we have endured for 8 years, we will endure for many more years in the face of these colonial countries.
Mr. Prime Minister, U.S. and the U.K., they keep promoting that the operations of the Yemeni army in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden are completely not related to what is happening to the people of Gaza. How do you respond to that?
We fought 17 countries and did not fire a single bullet, neither in Bab el-Mandab, nor in the Red Sea, nor the Arabian Sea. But how long can you ignore the daily crimes in Palestine with folded hands? To date, the number of victims has exceeded 28,000 martyrs, not to mention the wounded and the missing. Aren't these human beings so that America and its allies do not consider them humans? These are our Palestinian brothers. We went out to fight with them, and we did not go out until a month after the start of the war on Gaza. We were waiting for the Arab regimes and armies that possess billions of dollars in weapons and the latest technologies to move, but they did not. When we felt that Arabs and Muslims had abandoned their responsibility to protect our people in Gaza, we intervened. We intervened to support the truth and the Palestinian Mujahid and the Palestinian civilian who is being deported from one area to another, whether in Gaza or the West Bank. We did our duty when others did not. Our enemies try to distort our position, but the world knows our position. The aggression and blockade in Gaza must stop, and our operation at sea will stop. As for media lies, they will not work as they were in the past. Today, the world knows what is happening. We see free people demonstrate in America, Britain, Germany, France, and the rest of the Western countries. All of these people come out to support the Palestinian cause. Some of them saw a Palestinian mother struggling and sacrificing her life for her child. We no longer talk about the genocidal war in Gaza only in our media, but rather it is the popular media and social media that exposed the lies of Westerners. The Western regime fell after the Al-Aqsa flood began. All their slogans such as morality, human freedom, international humanitarian law, justice and equality have fallen. They were unable to cover up the heinous crimes in Gaza and the West Bank.
Will your open war with America and Britain affect the progress of reaching a peaceful solution for the country and to maintain the peace in the country and to rebuild the country?
We do not expect there to be an impact because the peace process is mainly linked to Yemen and Saudi Arabia. They in Saudi Arabia have their projects and we seek to rebuild our country and repair the wounds they caused. They killed tens of thousands of us. Saudi Arabia needs peace more than us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Abdulaziz bin Habtour, for your time. The Yemeni Prime Minister, thank you so much for your time. It was our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
اقرأ. بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه.
السلام عليكم. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRB English Radio in cooperations with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really glad to let you know that again today we have brothers Hassan Nasrullah, Hussein Akbari, Hussein Rohullah, and Ali Nasir. I really, really welcome you all, brothers. Salaam alaikum. Welcome, everyone.
Alaikum assalam, sir. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. Hussein, how are you?
I'm fine.
Alhamdulillah. So, Ali Nasir, how are you?
Alhamdulillah, sir. Great.
And Hussein?
Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah.
So everyone is fine. Hope you are doing well, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Let's get started. Inshallah, today we'll talk about Ayah 158 from Surah
Al-An'am
on page
150.
So brothers and sisters, as you're listening to the Quran, turn to page 150 as well. Ayah 158, Surah Al-An'am. We will explain this ayah, inshallah. We will practice the tajweed rules and also the recitation. So, first and foremost, let's everyone listen to the recitation first.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Hal yanzuruna illa an ta'tiyahumul malaikatu aw ya'tiya rabbuka aw ya'tiya ba'du ayati rabbik. يوم يأتي بعض آيات ربك لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل أو كسبت في إيمانها خيرا قل انتظروا إنا منتظرون.
Nice recitation, mashallah, mashallah. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Hal yanzuruna illa an ta'tiyahumul malaikatu aw ya'tiya rabbuka aw ya'tiya ba'du ayati rabbik. Allah Almighty says, do they await anything but that the angels should come to them, or your Lord should come, or some of your Lord's signs should come to them, to the people of the book, okay? Look, Allah Almighty says, the people of the book, okay? And also the pagans, all right?
Yes.
They were coming to the Prophet, and they were asking for miracles.
Yeah.
They were saying, if you are the Prophet of God, show us, bring your miracles, okay? Bring your proofs and show us your miracles. But even if the Prophet was showing his miracles to them, okay, they would again stop believing. They would again refuse it. Let's practice the recitation up to this part. هَلْ يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَّا أَنْ تَأَتِيَهُمْ يَنْظُرُونَ. Who can read it correctly, Hussein? يَنْظُرُونَ.
يَنْظُرُونَ.
أحسن. يَنْظُرُونَ. Nice. إِخْفَى, yes?
Yes.
إِخْفَى with heavy letters. هل يان it's not يان, no, heavy letter. يان heavy letter. الله is heavy letter. هل ينظرون إلا is the mad wajib, Hussein?
No.
It's not wajib. Is it mustahab?
It's jaiz.
Jaiz. Wajib means mandatory.
Yes.
Here, okay? Jaiz means it's not mandatory. You're permitted to ignore the mat or pronounce the mat.
Pronounce,
yes?
Yeah.
So when do you pronounce the mat? When do you ignore it?
Yes.
Yeah, when the mat
when
letters.
The mad letter.
What are the mat letters?
Alif.
Alif.
Ya.
Ya.
And waw.
And waw. So one of these letters, they are mad letters. They are called mad letters. They are used to stretch the sounds. So one of these letters, they are always sakin if we want to use them for the extension of sounds,
yeah,
okay?
If they're sakin and hamza are in same words.
If one of these letters and hamza, they all are in the same word, in one word. Like ja'a. Ja'a, the word hamza, the letter hamza and alif, mad, both are in the same word. So the mad is wajib in this case. But if they are in separate words,
it is jaiz.
The mat is jaiz.
Like now.
Like now here. Illa an ta'atihum. So illa ends with mat letter, alif. And an is another word. Starts with hamza. So that's because they are in two separate words. That's why it's not wajib, mandatory. Okay?
Yes.
It is permitted.
Qur'ani fi qalbi dawman.
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
وبختم كتابك أرقى هَلْ يَنظُرُونَ إِلَّا or إِلَّا أَن تَأْتِيَهُمْ إِلَّا أَن so أَن
إِخْفَى
تَأْتِيَهُمُ الْمَلَائِكَةُ aha, the word مَلَائِكَة look مَلَا حُسَيْن مَلَا ends with what?
Hamza.
No, it doesn't end.
Uh-huh, yes.
In the middle it is. So it's one word then. Malaika, it's one word. So mala has an alif. After alif you have hamza. Are they in the same word or no?
Yes.
So what is the mat, the rule of the mat? Is it wajib to extend or jaiz?
It's wajib.
Wajib. So extend it for 5 or 6 counts. أو يأتي ربك أو يأتي بعض آياتي ربك. Uh-huh. Question from Hassan. Hassan, what do you say about that qila on the top of Rabbika? What does it say? What is it? What is it?
It says that it's better to stop.
Is it a stopping sign?
Yes.
Okay, qila is a stopping sign. It says what?
It's better to stop.
Better to stop. But can we continue if we want?
Yes.
I want to read the whole ayah in one breath.
Yes, but okay. It's better to stop.
But better to stop. Thank you for the suggestion. Nice one. So, that's all in this part. Next part. يوم يأتي بعض آيات ربك لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها. Guys, sometimes this ayah is very beautiful, okay? It says that when you have power, when there is actually no emergency case, okay? There is no force on you, okay, to believe in Allah. If you believe in this case, okay, whereas no one forces you, you choose the right path with your own free will, with your own wisdom, with your own knowledge, this is valuable. This benefits you in the day of judgment. Okay?
Yes.
All right. So that's it. يوم لا يوم يأتي بعض آيات ربك لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل. Two, three tajweed points. لا ينفع حسين ينفع. What is the rule?
إخفاء.
إخفاء. Hide the sound.
Yes.
Read it.
لا ينفع.
ينفع أحسن. نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل. How do you read it, Hassan? How do you read this? Min qabl.
Min qabl.
Ahsan, min qabl. You hit the sound. That was correct, but extended for 2 beats. Min yes. qabl. 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 Echoing sound. Aw yes. kasabat fi iman. The same. It's not wajib. It's jaiz mad. You can extend it or skip it. Khayran. If you stop here, Hussein, how do you read it? Khayran.
Khayra.
Kha, khayra. Khayra.
Khayra.
No. Kha, khayra. Tafkhim. Kha.
Khayra.
Ahsan. Khayra. Ahsan, Hussein. Thank you. Qul intaziru. Ignore hamzatul wasl. Intaziru it is. But when you read the previous word and join the previous word to the word having hamzatul wasl, what do you do?
Skip it?
Yeah. Yes. Skip Hamzat al-Wasl. قُلْ إِنْتَظِرُوا قُلْ also hide the sound of noon. قُلْ إِنْتَظِرُوا إِنَّا مُنْتَظِرُونَ. Okay? مُنْتَظِرُونَ. So,
إخفاء.
Yeah, إخفاء. Ready to recite after me?
Yes.
So I'll recite this ayah. Brothers and sisters, as you're listening, listen and repeat after us. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
هل ينظرون إلا أن تأتيهم الملائكة أو يأتي ربك أو يأتي بعض آيات ربك
هل ينظرون إلا أن تأتيهم الملائكة أو يأتي ربك
ربك أو يأتي بعض آيات ربك.
أحسنتم، أو يأتي ربك أو يأتي بعض آيات ربك. ما شاء الله. يوم يأتي بعض آيات ربك لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل.
يوم يأتي بعض آيات ربك لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل.
لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل أو كسبت في إيمانها خيرا.
لا ينفع نفسا إيمانها لم تكن آمنت من قبل أو كسبت في إيمانها خيرا.
أحسن. قل انتظروا إنا منتظرون.
قل انتظروا إنا منتظرون.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, for being with us up to this time. That's it from us for today. Hope you stay with IRB English Radio. See you in the next sessions. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Yemen. Part 4.
On December 3, 2017, the Yemeni media announced that a cruise missile with a range of 1,600 kilometers had been fired towards the Baraka nuclear power plant in Abu Dhabi's western desert. Later, video of the missile strike was released, so all the media in regional countries were amazed. It sent a chill down the spine of the Emirati Sheikhdom. Although the Baraka wasn't operational at the time and fuel rods were not injected into the nuclear plant, Ansarullah decided to show restraint and set the missile course in a way so it hit an open area several hundred kilometers away. However, it served as a reminder to the UAE leaders of the constant threat by the Yemeni army's long-range missiles against the facilities inside the UAE. After several months, when the conflicts in Al-Hudaydah heated up on July 26, 2018, Yemeni media sources reported a long-range Asamah drone targeted the Abu Dhabi airport. Abu Dhabi initially decided to put up a media gag on the incident, but after a while, the airport confirmed on X social media platform formerly known as Twitter, that there was an incident involving a supply vehicle at the airport on July 26 at 4 p.m. and claimed the incident had not affected the airport's operation. However, UAE officials categorically dismissed any drone attack on the airport. Less than a year, in May 2019, the truth came to light. The Al Masira television network somehow accessed and released the video recorded by security cameras at the airport while the Yemeni drone launched a suicide attack and exploded inside the airport. It was almost from that time onwards that the UAE Army ruled out the option of getting directly engaged in military confrontation with popular Yemeni forces. Yemen has 15 islands in the Red Sea, Bab el-Mandab Strait, and the Arab Sea that are categorized as five archipelagos of Socotra, Hanish, Zubair, Kamaran, and Perim. Some of the islands have no inhabitants, and some others like Socotra and Kamaran have inhabitants. In March 2015, the Saudi-led coalition kicked off its war on Yemen. The heavy conflicts inside Yemen sent tensions over ownership claims on the islands out of focus. But the Emirati leaders were after precise planning to occupy the islands and gain control over Bab el-Mandab and Socotra near the Indian Ocean. The presence of the UAE military in southern Yemen and northeastern coast of Africa and the occupation of the Yemeni islands in that region could give a strategic edge by controlling the maritime transportation through the Bab el-Mandab Strait. The defeat in the Al Hudaydah port led to a ceasefire deal between the UAE and Sana'a-based government. Gradually, UAE decided to withdraw its forces but had an eye on another strategic region, the Socotra Island.
UAE, very active on Socotra, and also Oman, which has more deep historical ties in the east of the country, now supporting would-be Sultan of Al Mahra and Socotra. So we've got three international players there.
The Socotra Island has unique tourist attractions and flaunts its natural phenomena. Before 2008, when UNESCO put the flora and fauna of the island on its list, it wasn't known to many people. The dream of the UAE leaders to gain control over Socotra dates back to a decade before the war on Yemen. Due to the unique geographical location of the island, the storms from the ocean hit the island and every time inflict huge damage on the infrastructure and the almost 60,000 inhabitants of the island. The UAE's presence on the island dates back to 2000 when a strong storm hit the island. The UAE's Red Crescent sent a few planes carrying humanitarian aid to the island. Abu Dhabi has been seeking to gain a foothold on the island ever since. 8 months after the Yemen war was launched, in November of 2015, Cyclone Meg struck Socotra. The cyclone was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the UAE Army so they could deploy their military forces and station them on the ground under the pretext of sending aid to the island. As of October 2016, 31 cargo airplanes and a few logistic ships containing food and medical supplies were sent to the people living on the island. At the same time, they increased the number of Emirati forces on the island as well. On April 30th, 2018, the UAE's military planes and warships occupied Socotra and took control of the airport and the pier on the port of the island. About 100 UAE military forces were stationed in sensitive locations on the island and grabbed complete control over the island. Saudi Arabia and the former government of Mansour Hadi protested the move by their former Arab allies. It triggered heavy conflicts between the two sides in southern Yemen. It left thousands of forces from both sides dead or wounded in different areas, including Aden and Shabwa. Two weeks after the occupation of Socotra by the UAE, after Riyadh and supporters of Mansour Hadi ramped up pressure, the UAE army agreed to hand over the administrative control of the island to the resigned government of Mansour Hadi, but it still had military control over the island and airport.
The Emiratis see this as an opportunity to demonstrate some real kind of Arab-style nation-building, economic, rebuild them, and they see the ports as the fundamental way to do this. So now the Emiratis control the port of Mukalla that we talked about earlier, they took back from AQAP, the port of Aden, port of Mocha. If Hodeidah gets resolved, then they control the port of Hodeidah on the Red Sea. So all the major ports are now basically under Emirati control. Think of Dubai Ports World.
In the summer in 2019, the UAE started to pull its forces out of southern Yemen, a process that took until February of 2020 when they announced that the last batch of official forces was withdrawn from the port of Aden. The occupation of the Socotra Island and the withdrawal of the Emirati forces from Yemen were heavy blows that Abu Dhabi dealt against Riyadh amid the Yemen war. It aroused the wrath of Saudi leaders. After the skirmishes on the southern front ceased and UAE forces withdrew from Yemen, the Saudi army and forces under its command in northern Yemen were being crushed under the heavy strikes by the Yemeni army and popular forces, so they retreated from large oil-rich areas in Al-Jaf and Ma'arib. Saudi Arabia and Mansour Hadi's former government blamed Emirati stab in their back for the retreat, but the UAE leaders knew very well that Saudi Arabia could no longer be their reliable ally in their greater plot in the Bab al-Mandab region. So they were looking for a new partner or a regional power to complete their plan, and for this reason, they ganged up with the Israeli regime.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio.